Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
It is episode number 209. This week, I am pleased to be joined by a returning guest, is Mr. Paul Vosch. And Paul is very tired now, but will not be tired later on. And this is going to require an explanation. But first of all, Paul, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, John. I'm actually in the same country for once on back-to-back episodes. So that's a nice thing. But I'm not actually in the same place. I'm not even in the same place between two shows. Well, I'm in the same apartment in between the two halves of the episode, but I am finally in my new apartment, so it's really, really nice. So you get to listen to the audio in two different rooms on the same episode, so look forward to that.
Yes. So let's we have to briefly explain here what's going on. Basically, we were originally planning to record on both shows on Sunday, April 11th, the All Japan Champion Carnival Night 3 and the DDT April Fool Korakuen that both took place on Sunday. All Japan said, hey, wait a minute, fuck you. We have our show on VOD only, and we're not going to release it in time for you to record on Sunday. So yeah, go fuck yourselves. And so basically what we did was we recorded on Sunday the DDT half. We already recorded that, but that's going to be the second half of the episode. So you're going to hear that after this. And now we're here back on Monday, April 12th, recording the All Japan half and the intro and everything. So Paul was, you know, it was a normal hour for Paul yesterday, today, because, you know, I have work and, you know, Paul also has work, mostly because I have work, you know, even without the commute, I still got to work until a certain time. But anyway, the point is, it's midnight for Paul. So if Paul sounds exhausted, it's because Paul's exhausted. But that's what happens. This is not our first plan. That's all I'm going to say. But the DDT stuff, we did like almost an hour just on that one DDT Korakuen, and you were very energetic for that. So people can look forward to that at the second half of the episode that was recorded first.
I think some of the discussions are going to be really confusing, and also I'm putting in my petition to name the episode Time is a Flat Circle.
I'll put it in the description or something. Yeah, that's funny. Did you get to catch any of WrestleMania, pal? I can't do Vince. What am I trying to do Vince for?
No, I haven't. And again, like talking about things that are going to get confusing, I did catch some stuff about like Fiend versus Orton as well. Where you might hear later that I'm hoping that it will happen in the middle of a hurricane, and I hope that both men get carried off by a tornado. But that didn't happen.
Something funny did happen, though. I'm just going to give everybody my quick and dirty WrestleMania review. 2 seconds. Because I didn't even see all of both shows, so I can only tell you what I saw. Night one, Bobby Lashley beating Drew McIntyre to retain the WWE title. I went 2 3/4. a perfectly fine little match. I don't get why people are going way higher on it, though. The tag team turmoil gauntlet, easy for me to say, won by Natalya and Tamina. Horrible. A dud, I guess. I don't know. It was a really horrible match. Cesaro beating Seth Rollins. Pretty good. I went 3.5 stars on it. Good match. I don't blame other people going higher, but it was definitely a good match. Then I missed the next three matches because I switched over. Well, I missed basically the rest of the entire card because I switched over to watch the DDT Corican live, which, you know, you'll be hearing our thoughts on later. I went back to watch the main event, though, because it was getting rave reviews. And for once, I totally agree with rave reviews for a WWE match. Bianca Belair beating Sasha Banks in 17:15 to win the SmackDown Women's title. Outstanding match, 4.5 stars. My favorite WWE match in many years at this point. I really can't even think of what the last WWE match I went over 4.25 on. I mean, just this was an outstanding match. Contrasting it with the main event of night two makes it even more obvious to me why I love this match so much, because like I'm so sick of the WWE tropes, right? The WWE the trope main event where, you know, it's a fucking three-way and there's interference because it's all legal, Michael, and they do lots of cool, you know, they do lots of intricate spots involving plunder, and I don't know, I can't bring myself to care about any of that. Here, they just did a wrestling match, and it was awesome, and just a really outstanding work match. They told a very simple story of the veteran Sasha against the young powerhouse Bianca, even though Bianca's actually older than her. But Bianca's a rookie compared to Sasha, who's been there for years now. But yeah, I mean, it was just a very simple story with like Bianca doubting herself, and then the end she beats her. Just a really outstanding match, the kind of shit you never get from them anymore. So, you know, definitely, if you're going to watch anything from this, from these two shows, this is it. Although there's one other recommendation I make too on night two. And then night two, Randy Orton beats The Fiend. It was under 6 minutes, so, you know, that's good. It had probably the funniest finish I could have imagined. Who could have told you, you know, if I had told you yesterday, Paul, what is, you know, asked you, like, Paul, what is the finish of Orton versus The Fiend going to be? I don't think you would have ever came up with, hey, John, there's going to be a giant jack-in-the-box, and Alexa Bliss will come out of the jack-in-the-box with a crown of thorns on her head, and black goo will caress down her face, and The Fiend will turn around and take one single... Well, The Fiend will be very concerned for some reason, like, Alexa! Like, he'll slowly walk towards her with his hand in the air, like, my queen, what has happened to you? And then he turns around to one single RKO from Randy Orton, and despite the fact that he once, like, kept kicking out of, like, 10,000 fucking curb stomps from Seth Rollins, a single RKO will pin him. And it's like...
Don't forget, also came back from being burned alive. But look, it's an RKO out of nowhere. Like, who can withstand that? No one can. If we've learned anything in wrestling over the past 10 years, is that an RKO out of nowhere will just finish anyone.
So fucking stupid. But yeah, this was at least so bad it was funny, but obviously, like, negative stars. The tag team match for the women's tag titles, Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler beating Natalya and Tamina. Pretty terrible. I don't know. I don't remember what I gave it. I gave it bad. Kevin Owens beating Sami Zayn. This is the other match that was awesome. It only went 9 minutes and 20 seconds. I wish it was longer, but it was still so awesome. I still went 4 stars flat on it. So definitely watch that. Did not watch Sheamus versus Riddle. I put on the New York Rangers instead. Apollo Crews and Big E. You know, it was fine. 3 stars. Didn't really have a problem with it. Just... their usual kind of no DQ match, which they're doing another one later in the night. I don't know why they had to do one here.
So the ring wasn't then, covered in drums?
No, there were like a whole bunch of drums on the outside.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Because of course there were. The big disappointment of these two shows, Rhea Ripley defeating Asuka to win the Raw Women's title. I like both these wrestlers, especially Asuka, obviously, but this was just a very average match, like 2.5 stars, really. Not worth watching. And the main event, Roman Reigns beating Edge and Bryan. It's a match I've seen lots of people raving about. If you like WWE trope stuff, I'm sure you loved it. At this point, these matches have a ceiling with me, and I can't go higher than like 3.5 stars. Could tell it was well executed. I just don't, there's no one. Later on, we're going to, obviously already recorded, but later on you'll hear me talk about Don Shokudino versus Jun Akiyama. And I said, like, even though I think there was an outstanding match, as you know, you'll hear all about, if you don't like Dino matches, that one won't change your mind. If you don't like WWE trope main events, you know, the wild brawl, quote unquote, the intricate spots, the, you know, we have to wait around for Roman Reigns to set up a powerbomb through a table, you won't like that either. If you love that stuff, this is probably as good as you're going to get, basically. I mean, it's a very, very good at that style. That style is not really for me. So I gave it 3.5 and moved on with my life. But yeah, I mean, overall, I thought this was still one of the, from what I saw at least, one of the better Manias, certainly in the past few years. And, you know, I don't think they can ever go back to One Night again, because this was so much better. Like, just being able to split it up instead of having one fucking 7-hour show, you know, it's just a million times better.
Look, but, yeah. I mean, WrestleMania, right? It's like their biggest event, so, and it's when they get the most attention. So obviously, if they just rebrand everything to be WrestleMania now, they get all that attention all the time, right? That's how it works.
WrestleMania Backlash is the title of Backlash. Just keep go all the way with it, man. Let's have WrestleMania Taboo Tuesday, WrestleMania Great Balls of Fire, WrestleMania December to Dismember. Let's do it all, baby. I don't know. It's so stupid. WrestleMania The Horror Show's Extreme Rules. Yes.
WrestleMania Fastlane Vroom Vroom.
WrestleMania Fastlane Vroom Vroom. WrestleMania Roadblock on the Road to WrestleMania. Yeah. There you go. That's my mini WrestleMania report. You know, I'd say again, really, I would highly recommend Owens and Zayn and Bianca and Sasha. And there's a bunch of other stuff that's pretty good. And Orton versus the Fiend is really funny. But other than that, you know, part of the comedy Orton versus Fiend too is before that finish, they just did like a regular wrestling match. Like after all that, like you just got in there. I mean, they had the Fiend lighting, but like, you know, he just tried to like. He burned you alive and made you come back as a burned zombie man. And the Fiend was like, yeah, I'm going to do some wrestling now. Let's do some grappling. I'm like, what is this match? Like, I've never been burned alive, but I think if I was, I would like want to do something other than like wrestling moves to the other guy. It's just really bizarre after all that build and everything. Like all the magic tricks too that Alexa was doing in the entire lead up and everything, and like fucking and the Fiend's just like, yeah, I'm gonna, you know, stick my fingers in your mouth. That's my It's like what the heck? It's like what the fuck? But you know, the Fiend.
Look, sometimes some grudges can only be settled with a good old like conflict in the ring, just some good old catch-as-catch-can. Like, it's just how men settle it, really.
A mandible claw, that's yes, right. Exactly. You tried to burn me alive. Here's my fingers down your throat. It's like, okay. Well, anyway. So that's the WrestleMania review. Let's get into the Champion Carnival. Night 3 from Niigata, Sunday, April 11th. Not for the rest, not for anybody there who wasn't there at the building. It wasn't Sunday, April 11th. But yes, that's when the show took place. So if you're wondering about Nights 1 and 2, of course the answer is they are available right now on the Wrestling Omakase Patreon. So we're doing daily audio coverage of every single show of the Champion Carnival, except for this one, exclusively on the Patreon. So if you want to hear my thoughts on Nights 1 and 2, Night 1 is a show that I loved, Night 2 is a show that I kind of hated, so quite a dichotomy there. And then every show going forward from here on out, all the way to the finals, will only be on the Patreon. So if you want to follow along, daily audio reviews, every single Champion Carnival tournament match, only on the Patreon. So again, it's patreon.com/wrestlingomakase. You guys should know that by now because I plug it every week, but it's only $5. You get every single Champion Carnival episode coming up, the two that we've already done, plus the Champion Carnival Finals Retro Roulette I did with Jerry from Voices of Wrestling back last week, which was a lot of fun. We covered a ton of stuff like 80s, 90s, 2000s, all the way up to 2019. So, you know, we got a really, really interesting batch of matches with Sawa and Tawe. That was so much fun to talk about. That was from 95. But yeah, so, you know, plus everything else on there. You know, if you want to go back and relive the New Japan Cup, you can. We have tons of different series covering, you know, different themes of like one match episodes. you know, where each episode covers one match. Aha. But yes, all sorts of stuff. All on the Patreon, 2 exclusive full episodes a month. So definitely, I think, more than worth your $5. So patreon.com/wrestlingomakase. All right, so let's get into this show. I will give the results of the non-tournament matches. I did not watch them. Did you? I never watched the non-tournament ones. I don't know. Did you watch them?
I did watch the non-tournament matches. As I said, they're not essential, but I think they at least, like, if you have the time to watch them, like, I think it's worth watching them because, like, the next generation of, like, All Japan is on there and it's looking pretty decent. So, like, it's worth checking out.
So the opener, Hikaru Sato, Dan Tamura, and Francisco Akira beat Izanagi, Atsuki Aoyagi, and Rising Hayato. Sato beat Aoyagi in 8:43 with a backdrop. Any quick thoughts on this one?
No, makes perfect sense. I mean, it's the exact same match they had the night before, essentially. And Sato's the next junior challenger, so all makes perfect sense.
That is coming up on this tour, I believe, on night 6? Let's see. Yeah. No, night 7.
Yeah.
So it's a Sunday, April 25th, Korakuen. Then we have the second match, Koji Iwamoto beating Ryuki Honda. This is during Honda's 7-match trial series. It's the fourth one, I think, right?
I believe so, but yeah. Nope, this was pretty fun.
Iwamoto beat him in 7:56 with a chicken wing arm lock. Yeah, pretty fun.
Yeah, it was pretty fun. I mean, Honda's obviously going to be a heavyweight, but Iwamoto also, like, he gave him a bit of stuff, but he also, like, very clearly showed that he's, like, better than him still, but, like, Honda, I think, is going to be fine and, like, definitely someone to look out for.
In match 3, the Total Eclipse team, Tajiri, Hokuto Omori, and Yusuke Kodama, beating Yoshitatsu, Takao Omori, and Black Minso Rei. Hokuto gets the pin on Minso Rei, as he did yesterday, and 7:50. I think on night 1, too. I think he pins him every night. But
yeah. I mean, it seems that this is actually building to an All Japan TV 6-man title match soon as well.
There you go. So then we get to our Champion Carnival matches. It kicks off here with Jake Lee defeating Koji Doi in 8:10 with the D4C. Lee goes to 2-1, and Doi drops to 1-2. So this one here, this started out with Lee, you know, since they're both in Total Eclipse, Lee told Doi to lay down for him as soon as the match started. That went about as well for him as it always goes for the Bullet Club leaders in the G1. Doi immediately tried to roll him up with a crucifix hold instead. I should note, too, by the way, this show was like single hard cam, which that stuff can be a little hard to watch. I don't think it really was on this show. I think there's some venues that lend itself to it better than others, I guess. Like, some venues you feel like you're so fucking far from the, like, there's just so much space in front of you that, like, I don't know, maybe it depends on how they set up the hard cam. It really didn't bother me that much on this show, you know, once I started watching it.
Yeah,
there are shows
it was
where,
fine,
like,
but I think when it bothered me was, like, when they went, like, widescreen, because that venue just looks, like, weird on, like, the wide shots, but, like, when they just focused on the ring, I think it was fine.
Yeah, I mean, there are shows where I feel like the hard cam is too far from it or something. Doi ends up getting the early edge here. He puts Jake down with a shoulder block. He hits a jumping elbow, but he only gets a 1 count off of it. He follows up by stomping Jake out in the corner. Jake, though, comes back with a knee to the gut, tosses him to the outside, slams Doi into the apron repeatedly. But Doi finally reverses one of these and starts giving him a taste of his own medicine. Back in the ring, Doi hits a running spear for a 2 count. Jake finally comes back with his flying kick. That leaves both guys down. The crowd was, like, into this interstable battle. I thought they were clapping pretty loudly here. So, you know, they were into this, you know, Eclipse versus Eclipse battle. Lee hits a running boot in the corner for a 2 count. He hits a series of knees, followed by a running knee to the chest for another near fall just before the 5-minute call. And then Doi enters back with his cool little hanging stomp in the ropes for another 2 count. He hits Lee with 3 straight short arm lariats, but only gets another 2 count off of that. Doi then goes for his big running finishing lariat, but Lee counters with 2 more running knees, yet another near fall. He hits his big Bama-Ye-esque running knee to the back of the head, followed by his delayed brainbuster, and that is the pin. I thought this was a decent little opener. Nothing you're going to remember at the end of the tournament or anything. They both worked hard in their limited amount of time. They both looked, you know, pretty good. And Lee putting Doi away decisively makes sense, as he's the underling and all that. But even in the amount of time it went, I thought it got a little repetitive for me. So I only ended up going 2 3/4. Above average match, but not like a banger of an opener to me or anything.
Yeah, no, definitely. Like, nothing special. But it also didn't really have to be, like, given, like, the card position and everything and where the show was happening too. So I think it was perfectly
fine.
Look
at Paul hating on the people of Niigata. You don't deserve hot action, Niigata.
No, and it's actually something that I'm going to talk about later that actually, or mention later, it's actually one of the reasons why I'm not really concerned about the quality of the shows just yet. Because that's just kind of how the Champion Carnival always has been in past years, like where it tends to start off with a really hot show and then it starts to like die down a little until they get to Korakuen. And like normally that's what happens. Obviously it didn't happen last year, but I'm still not really concerned, and I still thought this was this match was still like better than most of the matches we saw last year, even though it was only like average essentially.
You ever look at like a map of Japan and be like, why are all the cities on one coast, basically? Like, Niigata is the only major city, basically, on the entire, I guess you'd call it, north coast of Honshu. Like, every other city is on the south coast. It's kind of interesting.
That is weird, like,
yeah, I guess that's just how the country developed. But yeah, I mean, like, and Niigata's not that big a city, but I mean, it's like the only city that really, you know, gets like the big bold-faced font on a Japanese map. And then obviously the other coast, you go all the way like Hiroshima, Osaka, Nagoya, Yokohama, Tokyo, all the way up to Sendai. Like all these big cities are all on that coast. It's kind of interesting.
Probably has something to do with like mountains and like the way currents work and everything.
Yeah, probably. I just thought that was, because I you know, it's fun to like follow along these tours, and it's like they went all the way out here in Niigata after, you know, Osaka to Nagoya, that was pretty quick. But Nagoya to Niigata, I mean, that is a long trip if you look at it on a map. But yeah, I guess they get a lot of time off after this anyway, because the next show is not until next Saturday. But our next match is Shuji Ishikawa defeating Yuma Aoyagi in 11-13. Shuji goes to 2-1, and Aoyagi goes to 1-2. Should also mention, by the way, they dropped from 5 tournament matches to 4. It was 5 matches each on the first 2 nights, and then 4 each for nights 3-7, I believe. And then the penultimate show, it goes back to 5, which I don't really mind that. I saw some people who weren't that into it, but I, you know, 4 matches is kind of a good amount for a daily tournament. I don't know. But I mean, you know, you do have to worry about like who's off on each night now. So I guess it gets a little harder to keep track of. The 2 people off here, by the way, were Kohei Sato and Shinjiro Otani. But anyway, so Ishikawa and Aoyagi, we start with Shuji giving Yuma a clean break after backing him up in the ropes. He ends up running him down with a shoulder block soon after that. Yuma then low bridges him out under the apron, drop kicks him to the floor. On the floor, Shuji, though, cuts him off and like hits a double stomp off the apron. Always looks pretty nasty. Back in the ring, Yuma tries to come back. Shuji easily sidesteps a missile drop kick off the second rope. Beats him down some more after that. Yuma starts like turning on the jets a little bit to try to use his speed against the bigger Shuji. He eventually catches him with a nice running forearm after kind of running circles around him. And then he follows up with a crossbody off the second rope just before the 5-minute mark. Then a second crossbody off the top. I didn't think that looked as good as the one off the second rope for some reason. But, you know, just like a weird impact or something. But that gets a 2 count. When Shuji kicks out, Yuma goes straight into the end game, but Shuji is able to get his foot on the bottom rope to break it. Yuma goes for a German suplex. Shuji, though, is able to fight out of it. He hits a running lariat to Yuma in the corner. He hits a double stomp off the second rope for a 2 count. Yuma then comes back by finally getting his German suplex, but Shuji does the old pop up and hit a lariat before I sell it deal, which they've been doing in all Japan seemingly since the beginning of time. And that leaves both guys down. Both guys then trade some strikes before Shuji hits a nice little running clothesline for a 2 count. He immediately follows up with a giant knee for an even closer near fall. Yuma just barely kicks out. But Yuma comes back and gets the end game back on. And here I thought Shuji's selling was a bit hokey for me. Like, he was doing this big open mouth, like, I don't know, it looked like a fucking fish, like, in the middle of gasping for air or something. It looked pretty stupid. He did make the ropes, though, just before the 10-minute call. Yuma hits a strike combo to Shuji up against the ropes, but Shuji, like, pulls him in and hits the Fire Thunder Driver out of nowhere. That was a really cool spot. He can't cover or follow up right away, though, and Yuma then escapes when Shuji finally goes for the Splash Mountain. Yuma tries a couple of flash pin attempts for near falls. Then he schoolboys Shuji when Shuji was trying to for the giant knee again. But Shuji cuts back on the cradle into one flash pin of his own, and that is the pin. I am a big fan of flash pin finishes, I think, as longtime listeners know. I like it even more, though, when it's coming from someone like Shuji, who you wouldn't necessarily expect it from. It was just like such a great little cutback on Yuma's cradle. And it's the kind of thing we need more of in wrestling nowadays. Like, it only takes 3 seconds to pin somebody. It doesn't always have to be a fucking, you know, I feel like Sonata here. He always makes this point. It's not all about dropping people on their heads. But yeah, this was a damn good match outside of my little complaint about Shuji selling. It's nothing that's going to hit your, you know, fucking notebook or anything, but I had fun with it. I went 3.5 stars on this.
You know, and I think especially like you mentioned, kind of a cradle finish being really good. But what I find interesting about it is kind of, like, it shows kind of the development of both men as well. Because obviously, like, these two, like, have had quite a few matches at this stage. But, like, generally, like, when they face each other, and I'm actually trying to look at it, but I think, yeah, like, Yuma has actually never beaten Shuji Ishikawa in, like, a one-on-one match. And, like, yeah, he has beaten him in tag matches. But, like generally, like, when these face off, and I think what was really interesting about it was also that it was a flash pin finish between these two. Because, like, when they first faced off, like, Shuji would just decisively beat Yuma. Because Yuma, obviously, like, even in tag matches, like, generally is, like, the guy taking the heat and everything. Mm-hmm. And, like, he would just, like, beat up Yuma, and he would just leave him laying and just beat him decisively. And I think it kind of shows, like, the development, like, both, like, Shuji, like, sliding down, like, the ladder a bit. And then Yuma, like, slowly, like, moving his way up now that, like, Shuji can't beat him anymore, like, normally. Like, he has to beat him with a flash pin, and that's the only way he can, like, beat him anymore. Because he can't beat him, like, with his normal move.
So, to confirm, they have 3 singles meetings in the 2019, 2020, and 2021 Champion Carnival. And Shuji is indeed 3-0 against him. So, there you go. But just to confirm your point there. Then we go to the 3rd match of the evening, which was Kento Miyahara losing to Shotaro Ashino in 12-11 with the ankle lock. So Shotaro is 1-2, and now Kento is also 1-2. Ashino, he goes right after Kento's leg to start. He's driving into the apron and the ring post and, you know, squeezing on the apron or squeezing on the ankle from the floor. It makes sense he would get this vicious right off the bat. He's already started 0-2, of course, and, you know, he's staring down a possible 0-3 against the ace. Kento, though, comes back with a running knee in the corner. Apparently, this is today's limb work. What limb work match? I will say, at least it feels like he shrugs off less limb work than we got in the last 2 nights in a couple different matches. So it didn't really bother me as much as it did in a lot of those, in either of those matches. Like, one was, like, Shuji and somebody from night one. I should look this up first. It was like Shuji and Koji Doi from night one. And then there was like another one from night two. I think it was. Was it you? I think it was Yuma and Shotaro. But yeah, there was like there was a match on each night where they shrug it off a lot of limb work.
Yeah, it was Shuji versus no, it was Yuma versus Ashino in the previous night.
Yeah, and here they were like, you know, they really didn't shrug off that badly, but you know, it is notable. They seem to be doing this every night. Ashino cuts him off, though, again, and hits his deadlift gut-wrench suplex for a 2 count just before the 5-minute call. Then he mocks Kento's clap, which is kind of funny. You know, because Kento has that thing that plays at the end of his theme song, where he's like, that's right, clap for me, da-da-da. And Shotaro gets up, and he's like, da-da-da, yeah, huh? But it's like, you're not a heel anymore, buddy. What are you doing? Supposed to be a nice guy now. Kento tries to come back with a German suplex, but Ashino counters the German attempt straight into an ankle lock, which sends Kento scrambling to the ropes to break. Great little spot there. Ashino follows Kento onto the apron. He teases German suplexing him off of there. Kento does a great job just selling his desperation as he's grabbing on the ropes to block. He cuts Ashino off and hits an apron piledriver on the apron instead. But then we go back to the ring where Ashino escapes the big shutdown German, only for Kento to hit a normal German. Ashino no-sells it, hits his own German. Kento also no-sells it, which leaves us at a standoff. They have a decent little elbow exchange, and Ashino like shifts to his hard European uppercuts to put Kento down. He charges in, but Kento counters with his big high knee just before the 10-minute call. Kento then hits the blackout knee for a very close 2.9 count. He goes for the shutdown German again, but Ashino struggles to block it, and then finally gets out when Kento has him like lifted halfway up. Ashino goes for the ankle lock again. Kento counters with a kick to the face with the other leg and then hit another flying knee, but Ashino no-sells it and locks the ankle lock back on anyway. He rolls through it, though, and then gets Kento right in the middle. Kento's unable to kick his way out of it. Kento tries to stand up out of it. Ashino turns it into the heel hook, and Kento taps. I was pretty stunned when Kento tapped, honestly. I don't know about you, but I was like, I did not. Like, I thought Ashino probably had a chance to win this, but I thought it would be some fucking roll-up. I didn't think he was going to tap him out. But yes, huge win for Ashino, obviously. He avoids starting off 0-3, and more importantly, he beats Kento clean via tap out. This is a damn good 10-minute match. I thought it was match of the night. You know, other than a bit of spotty leg selling at the start, which, you know, like I said, didn't bother me that much since it was only a tiny bit of leg work this time. I thought this was really good. I couldn't quite go 4 on it, but I went like 3.75. Really good match.
Yeah, no, I pretty much agree. I think Kento is off to a really, really good start in the Champion Carnival.
So far. Oh, yeah.
Like, obviously, like, him against Zeus is always great. The match with Otani, that was easily the best match of night two as well. And yeah, he had the match of the night like here again. So
yeah.
And like given who he still has left on his schedule as well, like I think like he has like there should be like even more bangers coming out of him as well.
Yeah. I was gonna say, I know some people are very sick of him and I get it sometimes, but like he and Otani are carrying this tournament so far, honestly. So, and Otani did not work night three, so.
Yeah, and I mean, look, he hasn't been champion in like over a year now, so.
Yeah. I mean, you know, get the guy a break. but, you know, this was a, like I said, a really fun little match here. It makes up for their match in last year's Champion Carnival, which I thought was fucking horrible. but this one was really
good. I mean, it was definitely bad for the booking. What I'm actually curious about, just real quick, because I don't remember who Kento's actually facing on the final night of the Champion Carnival.
Jacob Lee.
Is it Lee? Yeah, so that actually makes perfect sense. So they're probably going to do like a comeback story with Kento, and then Lee, Jake will just like take him out on the final night.
Oh, no, I'm wrong. I'm sorry. Kento's facing Yuma.
Oh, Yuma. Interesting.
Yeah, Jake Lee's facing Shuji Chikawa in the last night. I don't know why I thought it was Kento versus Lee. When the hell are those two facing off? Let's see.
Yeah, that might be a draw then, if it's not on the final night or something, because then they might just want to save that. Like, that might actually be something. Kento might actually win that one because they might want to save that win for Jake.
Oh, Kento and Jake Lee. So I get everybody has a match that's not happening, and that's it for Kento.
That's
only 9 nights.
That's probably literally the reason why they do that. So they don't have to do that match because they don't do blocks. That might literally be the reason why they have like one match that doesn't happen. So they won't have to do that match. And then it makes makes sense for like Yuma to like play spoiler for Kento there as his tag team partner.
Yeah, so Kento versus Jake Lee is not happening. They're saving that match. There you go. Because I'm looking through the whole schedule. I'm like looking at another time just to make sure I'm not missing it. But no, that is Kento. Because I was thinking about the math. It doesn't make any sense. There's 9 shows, 10 guys, but everybody gets the night off. I mean, the only conclusion is there's a match that doesn't happen for everybody. And it's Kento versus Lee, I guess, for them.
No, that makes perfect sense, yeah. So you definitely want to save that Jake Lee one. Like.
Suwama versus Zeus, it was the main event. Zeus, somewhat surprisingly to me, beat Suwama in 1952, the Jackhammer. Starts off 3-0 here, the defending Carnival champion, and Suwama is now 1-2. We start with the usual big boy shoulder block battle and stuff that you'd expect. Zeus gets an early edge. He knocks Suwama down. He starts going after Suwama's arm a bit for a change. He works that over for a while. He locks him in a Fujiwara armbar, but Suwama is able to make it to the ropes to break. They end up on the floor. Suwama beats on Zeus for a while, rather slowly, of course, because, you know, Suwama's not doing much quick these days. He rams Zeus into the ring post from a power slam position, and then rolls back in the ring. Zeus eventually gets back in there, and Suwama stays on him. He beats him down for a while, locks in a Boston Crab. Just seems like I had time to recap here. It was pretty slow and pretty boring, honestly. But it does pick up from here. Zeus finally fires up with his hard chops and then hits a flying clothesline. He gets Suwama in a cross arm breaker, but Suwama is able to get out. Suwama comes back and tries for the last ride, but he can't lift Zeus due to the bad arm. So I guess that's good psychology, even though he really wasn't doing much else to sell the arm between that. But you could argue like lifting a guy for a powerbomb would take, you know, much more arm strength than anything else. So I get it. Suwama hits a series of German suplexes instead, but Zeus pops right up and no-sells them all before running Suwama over with a lariat, which leaves both guys down again. They get back up to their knees and trade elbows. They stand back up. Suwama hits a double chop, but Zeus ducks a lariat and gets one of his own. It's a little weaker than his usual lariat, to be honest. I thought it was kind of a subpar lariat, especially for Zeus. He heads up top and hits a frog splash. Now, this spot I didn't fucking get. I was hoping you could answer it for me. Was Suwama supposed to get his knees up? Was that supposed to happen here? Because he really didn't. But Zeus sells it like he did. So, like, I don't know. What the fuck happened?
Yeah. No, I think it was a bit of a botch. And maybe Suwama was just like, my knees are kind of really, really screwed up. So I don't want to take that chance. So I'm just not going to do it and hope that Zeus will sell it anyway. And I guess that was happening.
Yeah. Zeus didn't sell it. I mean, Zeus sold like Suwama got his knees up, but Suwama never got his knees up. So just a very bizarre spot. Suwama comes back with some slaps and some chops to the chest of Zeus. He hits a much better lariat than Zeus just did. That gets a two count. Zeus takes a weirdly long time to set up an air raid crash before finally hitting it. That was another weird spot. But then he mounts Suwama, hits repeated forearms. He then hits a choke slam, but Suwama kicks out too. Zeus goes up top and hits another frog splash. This time he doesn't sell it like he hit phantom knees. He stays on top for a two count. As soon as Suwama kicks out, Zeus locks in the dreaded face lock, but Suwama gets his foot in the bottom rope. The weirdest spot. This match had a lot of weird spots. The referee, Kyohei Wada, kicks the bottom rope, so Suwama's foot gets knocked off, and Zeus immediately takes advantage and covers him, and Wada counts almost three, and it's a close two count. What the fuck? Is Wada Purple Haze now? What a weird fucking spot that was. I was like, what the hell is going on here?
Nevada has clearly finished his feud with Kento, and now he's moving on to a feud with Suwama.
I was like, what the fuck? It's not even like they were arguing or anything before that, and like there was any reason why Wada would kick... It honest to God looked like Wada turned and joined Purple Haze. I was like, what is going on here? God,
that would be awesome.
That was such a weird spot. It's like Purple Haze Wada, I guess. Suwama suddenly grabs Zeus and hits him with a big backdrop suplex out of nowhere to put a stop to Zeus's offensive flurry. After recovering some more, he hits a running lariat in the corner and then another German suplex. Then he goes for a slow motion roaring lariat. I love that everyone in the company will not fucking take this roaring lariat anymore, because I brought this up on the Patreon shows too. If Suwama ever actually hit someone with this fucking thing, he moves so slowly now, it would make the guy look like a fucking dipshit. Just like, really, you couldn't duck this? Like a fucking, it looks like he's stuck in a time loop as he very slowly rotates and then goes to throw the lariat. Like every single wrestler is like, I'm not taking that move, Suwama. I'm going to duck it. You're going to try to throw it. I'm going to duck it. I'm not taking it. Because like it happens in every match now. It gets countered in every fucking match. I can't remember the last time I saw him actually hit somebody with it. But yeah, Zeus counters with his own lariat. He's yet another wrestler. He's like, I'm not taking that thing. They trade some more strikes. Very fast-paced sequence. It ends with a nice lariat from Zeus. And that puts him down for a two count. Zeus then hits the jackhammer. And that is the pin. He starts off 3-0 here. But yeah, all joking aside, I thought this was a good main event. Nothing that's going to like blow your mind or make your notebook or anything again. But like, you know, once they got past the boring part, it turned into a good little power battle, even with the weirdness. So I would go about 3.5 on this again. Good match between two veterans. Not really a whole lot else to say about it, honestly.
Yeah, no, after being very, very harsh on Suwama recently, I have to say that he's been solid so far in Champion Carnival. Like, his stuff actually looks a bit better, and I think it kind of like helps him as well that like he doesn't have to go like 30 minutes as well.
Oh yeah.
So I think that definitely like helps the structure of his matches as well. Like perfect example of that is like the Koi Sato match on the first night. Like I said, I was on this very show ranting for like 20 minutes straight about how much I hated that match. And then like I actually really liked the Champion Carnival match, but it was also like literally like a third of the length of that match. It was just so much better. And I also kind of like that they have like Zeus out to like an early like dominant start as well, like especially because he is like last year's winner as well, that it shows like that was not a fluke, that he's actually like really good. And then like I don't know yet which way they're gonna go. I think Zeus might actually sneak into the finals as well, because that's just like an easy win for Jake, and I think that probably would be a good match as well. But it could also just be that like Zeus like he gets off to like the early start and he's like the early favorite, and then he just loses out the rest of the tournament. So I'm kind of curious to see which way they're going to go here.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting. Hey, folks, a little awkward transition here because I forgot to record this week's ad live. But I need to let you know right now that support for Wrestling Omakase is brought to you by Manscaped. Who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming? That's Manscaped, of course. They offer precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. They obsess over the technology. Obsess over it, folks. It's developed to provide you the best tools for your grooming experience. Manscaped is trusted by over 2 million men worldwide. That's a lot of men, folks. 2 million men. We have an exclusive offer for my listeners. 20% off free shipping with the code OMAKASE at manscaped.com. That's manscaped.com. It's in the description as well, but it's exclusive offer only for you guys and for every other listener of every other Voice of Wrestling Network podcast, I guess. But make sure you use my code, which is OMAKASE. All right, those Everything Elite guys don't need any more money. They're all rich. Nobody knows that except for me. You can get 20% off again, free shipping with the code OMAKASE at manscaped.com. Look, Michael Spears lives on a compound, okay? He doesn't need your code. Manscaped.com. OMAKASE, your balls will thank you. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Promo code OMAKASE. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped. So here are your standings after night three. Zeus, of course, on top all by himself, 3-0 for 6 points. Then you have Jake Lee and Shuji Ishikawa, both 2-1 for 4 points. Then Kohei Sato and Otani, they got 2 points, but they only wrestled 2 matches. They're both 1-1. And then a whole lot of people at 1-2 for 2 points. Suwama, Kento Miyahara, Yuma Aoyagi, Koji Doi, and Shitora Ashino. My match ranking after night three, I figure I'd give my top 5 matches here. And again, if you want to hear talk about all these other matches, patreon.com/wrestlingomakase. Fifth place, I have Shitora Ashino versus Kento Miyahara from this very show in Niigata, night 3, at 3¾. Fourth place, I have Kohei Sato versus Suwama, which you just mentioned. I liked it better than their title match, too, even though I wasn't quite as down on their title match as you were when we did that episode. But yeah, this was, a good little sprint here from night 1 in Osaka, 3¾. Third place, Kento versus Otani from night 2 in Nagoya. Really the only thing I think worth watching from that show. 4 stars flat on that. Second place, Otani versus Aoyagi from night 1 in Osaka. So a great start to the tournament for Otani, who wasn't on this show, but will be back for night 4. I went 4 stars flat on that. And first place, Zeus versus Kento, also from night 1 in Osaka. So yes, that was a great show. And I went 4¼ on that match. So, just they have such amazing chemistry. They can have a match at that level in their sleep, basically. So that was not one of their all-time best or anything, but definitely an awesome match.
Yeah, no, I think my ranking is actually pretty much exactly the same, except I have number 1 or 2 reverse. Like, I just like Yuma versus Otani just, like, a little bit more. Like, I think that just felt like a much more, like, it actually helped that it was only 10 minutes. Like, it just felt, like, a bit more snappy and everything. And just, like, after the finish, like the look on Otani's face, like, that was just tremendous.
There you go. So show number 4 will be next Saturday. So this tournament has two long breaks, basically. Like two 6-day breaks. Where nights 4 and 5 are Saturday, Sunday. They take another 6 days off, and nights 6 and 7 are again Saturday, Sunday, and then only 2 days off before the final two nights, Wednesday and Thursday. They'll all be live again, thankfully, except for night 8. So it's weird. The only other VOD show is the fucking penultimate show. It's kind of important, guys. Like, couldn't get the cameras at the fucking Yokohama. Nope. I get it for Niigata. Yokohama's like a fucking 20-minute trip from Tokyo. What are you people doing? But anyway, they can't get it all the way out to Yokohama. Sunday, or this coming Saturday, the Shinkiba First Ring Show, April 17th. This is a show you can watch live if you're on the East Coast of the U.S. or the West Coast, even better. But it's 11:30 p.m. Eastern Time start. I'm definitely going to watch live, and you know, probably have to review right after that because I'm
never a big fan of those, but I can't complain about Japanese wrestling otherwise. So
yeah, you usually get good start times out there in Europe. So this is the night off here for Kento and Shuji. So your four matches here are Suwama against Koji Doi. They're both at 2 points. We have the undefeated Zeus at 6 points against Yuma Aoyagi with 2 points. Does Yuma pull off the big upset, or does Zeus start off 4-0? I tend to think Zeus is starting off
4-0. I'm not so sure. I think Yuma might pull off the upset here.
Jake Lee at 4 points against Otani at 2 points. That could be really good.
Yeah, I think the way Otani has been working so far, like if Jake doesn't have a banger with Otani, I'm kind of worried, but like I think they're going to have a banger.
And then Shotaro Ashino against Kohei Sato, both at 2 points. Last time I checked, they did not have the match order out yet, so be interesting to see how they go with the main event there. And again, that's at Shinkiba First Ring this coming Saturday, and you'll be able to hear all about it on the Patreon, patreon.com/wrestlingomakase. Okay, so this is why we awkwardly transition. Any final thoughts with the Champion Carnival before we get into yesterday's audio?
I think it's been off to a solid start so far. Like, not much, like, blowaway stuff just yet, but as I said, like, it always tends to be, like, weighted heavier towards the end anyway. So I think, like, the end of the tournament is actually going to deliver, so I'm not worried.
It's a much better start than last year, for sure. I mean, I didn't think Night 2 was that good. But yeah, it's really with nights 1 and 3, it's already no good. I mean, nights 1 and 3 would be like probably the second and third best nights other than the final of last year's carnival. So, I mean, you know.
And night 1 would be like the absolute undisputed best show of last year's carnival. Like, that wouldn't even be close anyway.
Yeah, there you go. All right, folks. So, we'll be back in just a second with an hour on DDT's April Fool Korakuen, including some outdated WrestleMania takes. So stay tuned for that.
Here comes the wacky time warp music.
Should I put wacky music here? I don't know. it's funnier when it's just like a direct cut to me talking. So, okay, take it away, Pat John. All right, folks, through the magic of audio, you've already heard our All Japan Champion Carnival Night 3 review. This is the second half of Omakase 209, as we're now talking about the DDT April Fool show. So yes, it's funny how recorded audio works. You've now heard us talk about a show neither of us have even watched yet. So I don't know what you heard on the first half. Maybe the show was great. Maybe it was bad. You know, and we don't. That's how recorded audio works sometimes.
Also, for some reason, or at least very likely, I sound way more energetic now than I did on the first half. I'm just going to assume I'm going to be way more tired tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, we wanted to record this. I mean, we had planned on recording and, you know, getting it up on Sunday, April 11th. But the problem was the All Japan show was on VOD, and I forgot that VOD for alljapan.tv means whenever the fuck we feel like. So, you know, it looks like that'll be up, you know, like Monday our time. So we'll get that done. We'll get the first half done and get this episode out tomorrow. But, you know, we're here recording on Sunday about the DDT show, which was quite great. I don't know how you feel about it, but I thought this was a great show.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. Like, I've kind of made it, like, my idea for this year as well to, like, watch a lot more DDT than I have in the past. And I think definitely this was, like, a good kind of step in that direction as well to, like, really make sure that it is kind of appointment viewing, which I've done a pick and choose for DDT in the past, but I think I will definitely try and catch a lot more regularly going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I've always said DDT to me is a easy promotion to follow because, like, the only thing that's, like, must watch to me are the monthly Korakuens and, you know, their big shows. where, like, you know, if you want to watch more shows, I do watch more shows occasionally, but, like, you know, if I, the only stuff I feel like basically if I have an open week and DDT's running shows, I'll watch it. But if there's a million other things going on, you know I can keep up with DDT by just watching the monthly Corkins and the, you know, your Peter Pans and all those, you know, ultimate parties. So, you know, it's just it's a very easy promotion to follow, especially when, you know, everything else starts to feel overwhelming.
So. Now, to be fair, this was actually a week where a ton of other stuff was going on, but.
Yes. But I always, I never miss the Corrigans. Like, the Corrigans to me are like appointment viewing. So, you know. But yeah, it is funny. You haven't watched WrestleMania yet, have you? You probably already talked about this on part one.
No. I'm probably not going to watch the second night either. Spoilers. I heard good things about Sasha Bianca, so maybe I'll try and figure out a way to watch that. But yeah.
The only point, one reason why I want to bring up Sasha Bianca, which I'm sure we probably already talked about in part one briefly, but, like, you know, I was not expecting to basically watch 2 4.5-star matches back to back. And that's what happened here. Where basically I watched the first three matches of WrestleMania night one, which, by the way, had like a 50-minute rain delay, so I watched even less than I expected. And, you know, the first few matches were pretty whatever. Lashley and McIntyre was like, you know, 2 3/4. Really wasn't that great. The women's tag gauntlet was horrible. I mean, really horrible. Basically dud level. And, you know, Rollins and Cesaro, that was a good match, like 3.5 stars. And that's where I ended, basically, because it stopped there because April Fool aired live like 10:30 p.m. Eastern, you know, in the U.S. because it was 11:30 a.m. Japan start time. So I switched over to DDT, and as I'm watching this DDT show, people are just going nuts for Sasha versus Bianca. Like, you almost never see.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants. They all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
People go nuts for a WWE match nowadays. So I basically was like, okay, well, I was going to probably watch that at some point anyway, but I'm definitely going to watch it after I finished this DDT show now. And I watched it, so I basically watched it right after Akiyama Dino, which we're about to get into, was an amazing match. And Sasha Bianca was an amazing match too. So yeah, two matches that both made my top 10 matches of the year list that I watched back to back, which I was not expecting to happen for either of them.
No, we're talking about kind of bad weather for the Florida area as well. Apparently there's a tornado warning going on right now in Tampa, so I'm personally hoping that they put on Orton versus The Fiend in the middle of a tornado, because I think that would make that an instant 5-star classic if both men just get carried off by a tornado in the middle of the match.
There you go. But yeah, so I wanted to make that point. I'm not going to go big into Sasha Bianca, obviously, but an outstanding match. Definitely recommended if you haven't watched it. And you know, I am so used to people talking up WWE matches and then watching and be like, oh yeah, that was a good little 3.5-star match. And, you know, at this point, like, the fact that one actually did hold up to level people were saying it as was pretty stunning. I mean, that was my highest rated WWE match in probably like 3 or 4 years at least. I really can't think of the last time I went, because I went like 4.25 on Brian Kofi from 2 years ago, which was like in Brian Gulak, I think I gave the same thing last year. So yeah, I mean, this is just a really, really outstanding match, Sasha and Bianca.
Okay, now I really have to like take a look for that, because I think literally everyone I've seen talk about the match has said that it's excellent. So
yeah,
I might have to break my streak of like watching WWE.
Yeah, the lowest I've seen people go on is like 4. So I think you will really like it. Now, also an outstanding match that I was not expecting: the main event of DDT April Fool, Jun Nakayama defeats Don Chocodino with the Chinko Clutch Exploder Suplex in 23:37. That means penis clutch, folks. V2 for Jun Nakayama. This was an incredible match. I mean, look, if you, the listener, hate Don Chocodino, hate his matches, will not watch them, first of all, I get it. You know, I get where people are coming from with that. And second of all, this match will not change your mind. So if you're one of these people that just cannot watch Dino, you know, finds the act disgusting, whatever the fuck, this match is not going to fucking change your mind. That's for sure. But if you can handle Dino, if you do enjoy his matches, this is like one of his best ever. And, you know, up there with like the, he kind of always delivers in these big moments, but like it's up there with like that Daisuke Sasaki match from a couple years ago. You know, there's other ones too. I'm probably not even thinking of, but yeah, I mean, he had one, like, I think who the fuck was championing them with Ishikawa, right? I think he had one with Shuji Ishikawa that was really, really good. Maybe I'm making that up.
Yeah. I think, didn't he have like a really good match with Hiroshima too?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure he did, but I'm going to look up Shuji Ishikawa's title run, 'cause I feel like, I don't think I'm making that up, but maybe I'm making that up. I want to check it real quick. But yeah, I mean, like, you know, this is a guy who, you know, he does come through when, you know, he's in a big title reign. I mean, you know, it did happen. October 23rd, 2016, Ishikawa beat him in 21-27 at Korakuen. And that was his title shot for winning the DDT general election that year, back when they still did that. So, yeah, that was during Ishikawa's title reign in 2016. But yeah, I mean, he does usually deliver in these big title matches, and but this may have been his best one yet. And a big part of that is, you know, Akiyama. I mean, Jun Akiyama is one of the best wrestlers who's ever lived. I don't think that should be a hot take. You know, even if you disagree with me, hopefully you at least understand where I'm coming from. This is one of the best wrestlers to ever do this, and he went out there with a guy who obviously is a very untraditional wrestler, but he. He and this guy, they made it work. They made a Jun Akiyama. Like, if you picture in your head, what does Jun Akiyama versus Don Shokudino look like? In a lot of ways, it probably is exactly what you expected. And, you know, they really made it work as far as, like, the serious badass wrestler against this, this character. What else can you say about Dino? And, you know, it really delivered on that level of, like, you know, these two very different wrestlers coming together and, like, making something special. Like, to me, it's the second best DDT match of the year. It's the best Akiyama KOD title match. It's better than the Gucci one. Very slightly better than the Endo one. I gave them both the same rating. But yeah, this is an outstanding match.
Yeah, I definitely ended up liking this match a lot more than I thought I would. Like, I'm kind of, like, I'm not a person that goes, like, I can't watch Dino matches at all, but I just know that they're not for me. So I definitely didn't go into this like with like super high expectations, but like I was kind of like when the match actually ended, I was like thinking in my head, I was like, yeah, no, I actually kind of love this match. And then the more I think about it, the more I actually like it.
So the match opened with a pre-match video package. Some great lines in here. Of course, as always, a big thank you to DET English Update, DET Pro _ENG. Dino says, quote, DDT is like a weekly manga magazine with different manga coming in and out. Akiyama's the main act right now, like Dragon Ball or Slam Dunk. Me, I always want to be that vulgar comic that parents don't want their kids to read. Just a great quote. It really does sum up DDT too, because, like, yeah, it is, you know, DDT can be serious, it can be funny, it can be whatever you want, especially in the main scene, you know, like it'll be, I mean, you know, this is a title that, you know, Mako Satomura held at one point. Obviously Dino has held it, you know, it could be different, very different depending on, you know, who was holding the title. The other awesome quote from the pre-match video was Jun Akiyama was asked, what would Giant Baba say about this match? And his answer was, he would always tell me that I do dumb things and then always shoot me a beaming smile. I hope he does the same today. Just a great line from Akiyama. The match started with Dino offering Akiyama a handshake at the start, but it was a trick as he immediately hits a spinning back kick and then tries to pin Jay with the, or June with the Gato clutch. I guess I almost said Jay White because of the Gato clutch. But yes, it gets a very close near fall. And then Akiyama's look of pure disgust as Dino is laying on the mat and daring Akiyama to come at him in his very unique way of doing so is really great. But Akiyama does go into his clutches and, like, you know, then watching Jun sell for, you know, a hand up his ass, truly something. Dino, at one point, you know, the part of like the entire story of this match was, like, you know, Dino representing DDT and what it means to be DDT versus this new outsider champion. And he yells, at one point, he just yells DDT and gives Akiyama a DDT on the apron, which was like, I guess, kind of an obvious spot, but also just really was just kind of cool. Dino then goes for the nightmare, but Akiyama avoids it and then literally starts kicking Dino's ass. Just kicks the shit out of his ass. He goes for a knee drop. Oh, he gives him a knee drop off the apron for good measure. Things do slow down from there. They chin lock from June just for the 10-minute mark. But, you know, it wasn't like egregiously long or anything. But I guess they need to get their breath a little bit. Dio counters a front suplex from Akiyama with one of his own. He does the testicular claw, but like right into this cool sweep that takes Akiyama off his feet. And then a Shining Wizard-style knee for a near fall. A big thing in this match with Dino was, like, modifying his usual spots to make them, like, more serious and do actual damage. And this was, like, a cool example. And then right after that, he teases the nightmare again. You know, the thing where he, you know, pulls his pants down and, like, crotches over the guy. But it's a weird, serious version where he drops down really fast and turns it into a pinning, you know, a flash pin attempt and almost pins Akiyama. That was so awesome. I don't know if I've ever seen him do that before. And it was just such a cool, like, big match spot. He then goes for the Don Shoko driver. And, Paul, you can back me up on this, I think. When he stuffed Jun Akiyama's head in his tights, people screamed louder than they have in Japan since COVID started.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair to say. Yeah. They definitely got the crowd to, like, violate the COVID protocols a couple of times, which was really, like, at this stage has become the Japan indicator for a really big pop, and they definitely did it in this case. Akiyama also showed that he can still milk a near fall for, like, all it's worth as well.
Yeah, this crowd, I mean, look, this was a sellout crowd. This was 650, which is, you know, the sellout for Korakuen right now, and this crowd was screaming their heads off the moment Akiyama's head was in his tights and Dino hit this fucking Don Shoko driver. But Akiyama did kick out of two, of course. But yeah, I mean, just like one of the last reactions from a Japanese show in forever. You know, for people who don't understand why they push Dino in these main events, I mean, this is the reason. He gets gigantic reactions. We get a ref bump. Dino points at Makoto Oishi at ringside and then tells him to ram Akiyama's head into his ass. But, Oishi will not do it because he's loyal to Akiyama now. So Don Shoku gets Akiyama in the Don Shoku triangle. He starts pulling his tiny tights off, similar to what happened in Dino versus Sasaki a few years ago. Apparently it wasn't as bad with accidental exposure as it was then, but there definitely was some. But yeah, Akiyama is able to get out of it, you know, just before the 15-minute call. He knees Dino twice. The second one was a running knee, but Dino kicks out too. Akiyama immediately locks him in his front neck lock, the guillotine he does. But Dino escapes with aggressive humping, which I'm sure is the first time that particular counter has been used against Akiyama's neck lock. Jun is the one who has to make the ropes to escape the humping. And then Dino hits the Shin Danshoku driver, which is just the head stuffed into the tiny, tiny tights, so... You know, nothing else there between him and you know what. And Akiyama kicks out again at two. And then Dino hits a fucking moonsault for another two count. He tries for another one. Akiyama rolls out of the way this time. He hits another running knee and goes for the Rich Clutch Exploder. And then an amazing thing happens. The lights go dark. We get a video message from Dino. And again, thanks to DT English Update for the translation here. Dino says, if you're watching this video, I'm probably about to die. He's so serious, too. And he's like, before I die, or before I lose, let me tell this absolutely non-fictional story that I spent all night putting together. He says, last year was a struggle, and it really helped that you joined. And he goes, Akiyama, arigato. He's like, thank you for coming to DDT. Thank you for choosing DDT. And Akiyama, thank you for giving me time to recover. And he starts flipping off the camera. He's like, forget everything I just said. I do everything to win. This is fucking brilliant because they've had so many of these spots in DDT where, like, the lights go out and a video message starts playing. And it's almost always like the wrestlers are weirdly frozen in time or whatever. And here it was like Dito broke the fourth wall of it. He was like, we're fine, actually. You just gave me time to escape your wrist clutch exploder and recover from all the damage I'd taken. It was just a great, like, evil plan on his part.
Yeah, no, I also was so confused when that happened. Like, luckily, like, obviously, as I said, like, there's the DDT English account, and I would have just been completely lost if I hadn't had that. And, you know, it was a really great spot. And I think really this was also like it signified the moment the match really kicked into another gear, because I absolutely loved everything that like happened after they showed the video package.
Yeah. So, one of the other parts of why this was so great, because Akiyama did an amazing job looking like legitimately moved at first before this twist with Dino's double middle fingers. And then he turns right around and gets humped by Dino. Dino gives him the big kiss. That gets an enormous reaction. And then he does the Gotch-style Danshoku driver. He covers Akiyama, but Akiyama still kicks out. Dino pulls down the tights again, goes for the moonsault again. I couldn't tell if this was a botch or not. He sort of half lands it on Akiyama as Jun was in the middle of rolling out of the way. It may have been a botch, but if it was, they covered for it so well, it doesn't even matter. Because they, you know, both guys sold, and then Dino crawls over and covers Akiyama. So I don't know. I didn't have any problem with the spot.
I definitely think it was a botch, but as I said, they covered pretty well for it. But it definitely looks like Dino kind of like either Akiyama wasn't quick enough rolling out of the way, or Dino just really undershot his moonsault there. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, they covered for it well, so it didn't hurt the match for me.
Yeah, me neither. Dino pulls down more tights. He just like I guess stuffs them in between to hide his, you know, his penis, and he tries another moonsault. Akiyama rolls out of the way. He is not happy to have seen Dino's dick. He gets all pissed off. He hits another running knee for another two count. Dino gives him another double bird. Akiyama hits two more running knees. He pulls the knee pad down, delivers a third one. Dino still flipping him off, but Dino still kicks out. I thought that was going to be the finish, with Dino being like one more middle finger and getting hit with his knee. So just an amazing near fall. And then Akiyama delivers a rich clutch exploder. Dino fucking kicks out again. The crowd cannot believe it. They're just losing their minds. And Akiyama gives him yet one final wrist clutch and penis clutch exploder, which the announcer calls a Danshoku clutch exploder, but the official name ended up being like penis clutch. But yes, and that's finally the pin. Again, if you hate Danshoku Dino, refuse to watch his matches, I get it. You probably won't like this one either, so don't bother. But this was an honest-to-God, incredible match. The story of Akiyama having to like basically embrace Dino to beat him was like weirdly heartwarming, and his grin at the end was perfect, too. So, big match, Dino delivers again, and Jun Akiyama remains one of the best pro wrestlers who ever lived. 4.5 stars. Easy put 4.5 for me.
Yeah, no, like, for me, this was also, like, an all-time great, like, Jun Akiyama performance as well. Like, Dino did well in the match as well, but I think Akiyama's really the guy that sold me in it. Like, obviously, like, Akiyama is, like, one of my all-time favorite guys as well, so that probably helps as well. But, like, he just really was essentially, to me, the story was that, like Dino was, like, the guy that is, like, anything can happen, DDT, it's a manga or whatever. It's like, yeah, I can beat this outsider. Anything can happen. And Jun Akiyama is just like, I'm Jun fucking Akiyama. I'm just going to fucking beat the shit out of you. The fuck do you think you are? Like, I'm just going to beat you up. You think I won't just fucking grab your dick and exploit you into oblivion? Like, no, come on, man. I don't care. I'm just going to win this match. Fuck you. And, like, I just really love that energy about Akiyama. Like, I actually wish that Akiyama would have maybe gone a bit harder. Like, you know, in a weird way, the match that I was reminded of when I watched this, it was actually Akiyama against Shibata. Because like, that sounds weird. That sounds completely weird at first, like, especially to people that haven't seen that match. But it was, like, very similar energy where, like, Dino was kind of, like, he was a bit cocky, like, because he definitely felt like, look, this is my turf. You're entering my turf now. Like, this is my hometown. Like, you're not just going to, like, easily beat me. And Akiyama is just, like, if you fuck around with Akiyama, he's just going to fuck you up. And that's basically what he did in this match as well. And I think what also made me realize, like, this whole show, basically, but I think especially this match made me realize why I'm so much more in favor of the Akiyama title reign versus the Muto title reign, is, I mean, obviously, first of all, Akiyama can very clearly still go. I mean, that's not very surprising. I think even at the prime of their peak, like, Akiyama is just a better worker than Muto. Like, Muto obviously at his prime was great, and now it's a bit debatable. But, like, Akiyama is just such an amazing worker, and I think what he really does to DDT and why this title reign feels so much different is that he brings a certain, he brings a different kind of legitimacy to DDT. Because obviously at this stage, DDT is a much bigger company than Noah and has been for a long time. But I think if you ask the average wrestling fan, like both in Japan and especially in the West, like what is like the more prestigious company, it would still be Noah. And I think having someone like Akiyama choose to be in DDT instead of Noah adds like a whole, like, and be the champion to carry the company adds like a different level of prestige that DDT didn't have before, and that's why I like this title reign so much more.
Yeah, and I think just, you know, there's obviously stuff there where I think Akiyama was probably awkward about going back to Noah and didn't really want to do it, at least not full-time, whereas like DDT obviously doesn't have that kind of baggage. But yeah, just the idea that he would choose to do this run in DDT, you know, does elevate DDT. And, you know, he just looks like he's having a blast out there.
Oh, yeah.
And he looks like he's having as much fun as he's had in like a fucking decade. So, you know, I do think the run is really working out well.
Yeah. And I think people always think like I think similarly to like in a way that some people view Suzuki is that like people always think, oh, look, he's this super serious guy. He's not going to do the comedy stuff. And it's like, no, that actually he even in All Japan, like especially towards like when he like started to push himself, he did comedy stuff all the time. It's just he is the straight man in the comedy match where like everyone else around him does wacky stuff, and then he just hits an exploder as like the perfect punchline to all the wacky stuff going on around him. And that's why like I think that really helped in this match as well, where like, yeah, Dino did all of this wacky stuff, and then Akiyama is just like, okay, no, fuck you, now I'm just gonna end this match because I'm like essentially as the perfect punchline. Like it wasn't a comedy match, but like the ending was still a punchline, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it totally. I mean, this was not a comedy match. This was a big world title match where one of the guy's offense happened to be humping. But, you know, the joke at the end is obviously they have to do this penis clutch to beat him. So, but yeah. Afterwards, Hirashima comes out to challenge Akiyama. That's your KOD Openweight title match on June 6th at Saitama Super Arena for the Cyber Fight Festival. So, boy, can I not wait for that. I mean, I don't think that's a hot take. Akiyama versus Hirashima, it'd be awesome. Not much of a hot take at all. But that does mean, you know, a lot of people had speculated there would be some kind of Akiyama versus Muto match, even if it's not a singles match, with these two, you know, old guy champions for this Noah DDT show, and that's not happening. So it's kind of interesting, I guess.
Yeah. I was never on the train that they were going to do Muto versus Akiyama on that show, because it would have been like, I think they confirmed that it would be a title match as well.
Oh, like, you're right. They did say yeah.
Yeah, because then either you do like, I don't know, you do a draw, which would be a really big letdown, or you do like a fuck finish, which would be equally bad, because I don't think they have any interest in unifying the titles. Yeah. So I was never on the train that they were going to have a match there. Although, to be fair, now that it's definitely confirmed that that's not happening, I'm still holding out hope that the Muto match is him versus Nakajima, and Nakajima just like squashes him in 5 minutes, because you can have like Hirashima versus Akiyama as the big like main event match that goes long, so you can do a bit of different stuff with the Muto match.
But yeah, so the other thing is, as we're about to get into, you know, Hirashima and Okabayashi had just won the tag titles, so Akiyama, you know, basically said he wants a shot at those belts too. Makoto Oishi was at ringside, so it's he and Oishi against Hirashima and Okabayashi, coming up in only a week, April 18th in Niigata. So there you go, the KOD tag titles. The other big announcement for pre-show, which I forgot to mention, KOD 8-man tag title match, challengers to be determined. That will happen on the next Cork on May 4th. That, of course, goes with the Soma Takao Universal Title Challenge, that main event set show. And King of DDT, this year's single elimination tournament, that kicks off June 10th at Shinkiba, only 4 days after the big Cyber Fight Festival on June 6th. So I will mention we will do daily coverage of that again on the Omakase Patreon as we did last year. It's always a really fun tournament if you never watched it. It's, you know, they do like this big mega show with like 16 matches for the first round, like all in one night. And, you know, some of them are really quick. And it's like just a really fun tournament. It's not a long one either. It's not like the New Japan Cup, but they spread it out over a month. It's like it's over in like four shows, basically. The semi-main event, the KOD tag team titles, Harashima and Yuji Okabayashi defeat Katsusada Higuchi and Yukio Sakaguchi. Harashima pins Sakaguchi with the Somato in 1836. So Eruption fail in their third defense, and Smile Pisari become the 69th. Nice. KOD tag team champions.
What? Here's the thing, sorry, I just need to interject there real quick. How do you not make Dino the 69th tag team champion?
That is true. Real oversight on DET's part, you have to say. Was he the 69th openweight champion? I guess that's a good question. Let's see. Who was the 69th openweight champion? KOD openweight championship. Cage match. No, the 69th champion was Daisuke Sasaki. Oh, the 69th title reign was Sasaki's 2 second title reign. That's funny. When he beat Takashita at the show I was at in New York City, April 4th, 2019, and loses to Endo right afterward. Endo cashes in on him with the right to challenge contract. That, yeah, what a moment that was. One of my all-time favorite live wrestling moments, honestly. But just an incredible – I mean, that it helped. The Sasaki-Takashita match was like an awesome like 4.25-star match. And then Endo cashes in on him. I'm standing there in disbelief, thinking I'm about to witness the end of one of my favorite units of all time. And then they make up afterwards, which is like, oh, okay.
And then they split up later again, only to make up again. Like, I wonder how many more times they're actually going to do that story.
That is funny. I didn't think of that part of it. So, yes, the semi-main event here. This was really good. Maybe a tad disappointing for me, but I think most people seem to be higher on it than me anyway. It started off slow, a lot of mat wrestling and such. Eventually we get the Okabayashi Higuchi big boy shoulder block battle that goes to a draw. Neither guy goes down. They end up kind of like struggling into the corner with like a headlock and then breaking from there. Later on they trade chops. It's just as hard hitting as you probably expect. Okabayashi finally ends the sequence with a running power slam and then gets him up in the Argentine backbreaker just after the 10-minute call. But Higuchi escapes from the sleeper and then gets him up with a Canadian backbreaker. That's a little too cutesy for me, but it was all right. It's like, oh, my country backbreaker is better than yours. Okabayashi escapes. They trade lariats. Again, neither guy goes down. Higuchi finally hits a headbutt and then another lariat to win that battle, which gets a 2 count. Sakaguchi gets Okabayashi in a cross arm breaker, but he's able to power up and escape with a powerbomb in the corner. That was pretty cool. And then Harashima and Sakaguchi get into a big exchange of middle kicks, basically continuing where they left off from their brief but awesome singles match in the Korakuen from 2 weeks ago. It ends up being kind of a draw, but I think Harashima stays down longer. And then Sakaguchi and Higuchi then team up on Harashima just after the 15-minute call. But Harashima ends up coming back. He puts Yukio down with the Somato, and we have new champions. This is really good, but paced a little bit slower than I was expecting, which keeps it like just below the 4-star level to me. Still, I definitely recommend watching it. I would go 3.75.
Yeah, no, I really like the match. I also kind of expected a little bit more out of it, just like based on who was in the match. But I think overall it delivered. I did fully expect this to be my match of the show, but that actually ended up being the main event, funnily enough, which I think really just shows how much that match actually delivered. Yeah, I think overall, pretty decent performance. I think it was actually good title reign from Eruption as well. This was probably the weakest match of the whole reign. Like, I think it was still really good, but it just, like, every other match they actually had during the reign, a lot more than this one. Especially the match against the Sauna Club. Like, I think that one was absolutely excellent. But yeah, overall, pretty good performance. I was just like this was very much like a Sakaguchi match as well. Like, I think Higuchi, like, after he had the exchange with Okabayashi, just completely vanished from the match, more or less. He wasn't involved in the finish at all, and I don't think they ever even showed him like being taken out or like why he like didn't make the save or anything like that. Like the match just kind of ended, and then he just reappeared in a post match.
Yeah, that was a little weird for sure. Match number four on this show was a six-man tag, Damnation versus the San Nanakamina. I don't even know if I'm saying that right, but you know what I mean. Daisuke Sasaki, Soma Takao, Yuji Hino defeat Yuki Ueno, Shuma Katsumata, and Mao. Soma pinned Ueno with the Gin and Tonic in 15:50. Konosuke Takeshita isn't here, of course. He's in the San Kamina too, and he's not here because he showed up in AEW. That's where he's, you know, he had teased he was doing something for the next month that would take him out, you know, out of action for a while, probably only for a few weeks, and then he has to do a 2-week quarantine when he gets back to Japan. So I don't expect him to show up in AEW long term, is what I'm saying, because he's already booked on the Ultimate Tag League starting May 9th. And I'm almost positive the 2-week quarantine is still a thing. So he would have to get back in Japan, let's say, no later than, looks like April 25th. So 2 weeks from today. So yeah, I guess he can make like the next two Dynamites if they want him there. But he appeared on a house show, teaming up with Kenneth James Omega. And folks, they better have a fucking damn good explanation for why Takeshita was teaming up with Omega and the Young Bucks. Because I don't know if people remember this or people have just forgotten, but like Kenny Omega spent the better part of a fucking year burying Takeshita and Endo because, like, you know, and I'm not saying he did this as a shoot, by the way, but like it was to build up matches and it didn't end up happening due to COVID. But after he remember when Kenny showed up at Ultimate Party 2019?
Yeah.
You know, he started cutting these promos afterwards where he's like, I'm very disappointed in Takeshita and Endo as wrestlers. They haven't progressed at all since I was last here, and it's really hurting DDT, and it's really sad to see. And he buried them over and over again for the next like fucking year or whatever, because they were building a feud basically with Kenny against, you know, like they're going to do these two matches with Kenny against Endo and Takeshita, and Kenny was clearly going to beat Endo for the KOD title before they decided to do, you know, before they couldn't get him in the country and they did Akiyama. Well, first they did Endo Sasaki instead last year, Ultimate Party, and then they did Akiyama instead. But like, yeah, so basically in character, in canon, Kenny Omega has buried this guy repeatedly, and he just shows up at a fucking AEW house show like, ha, here I am, team with Kenny Omega, the guy who says I suck and can't carry a company. It's like, I'm sorry, this is the exact type of shit people complain about endlessly with WWE, where they ignore stuff that doesn't happen, ignore stuff that happened if it didn't happen in their company. And it's even worse probably in this case, because they're ignoring something that happened while Kenny Omega was in AEW. Kenny Omega was in AEW at the time, and he went to DDT and buried these guys, and they just bring Takeshita over to team with Kenny like it's no big fucking deal. If they don't address this on Dynamite, that fucking sucks. Maybe they will. Maybe I'm ranting for no reason, but it's one of these things where I said this is stupid. Why is Kenny and Takeshita teaming? And everybody's like, oh, you gotta give him time to explain it, John. I'm like, he's in the match right now. Are they going to explain it now? Why do I got to wait for them to fucking explain it? So, whatever. I don't know. Just fucking stupid. Yeah.
I am reserving judgment on that just because it was a house show and we don't yet know how canon AEW house shows are. Like, it's definitely a stupid decision to have that be Takeshita's, like, first appearance in AEW. But, like, if, like, essentially he just turns up on, like, Dynamite and he's feuding with, like, with Omega, like, I think in that case, like, I'm in essentially that way they established that, like, house shows aren't canon. Like, okay, then I'm like fine with that.
I'm not sure what
you even do with Takeshita in a 2-week run, because the only thing that would make sense if you build it up to for him to like have like a match with Omega.
Yeah, I don't know. I just saw that and I was like, this is fucking stupid. This is the exact type of thing where people give AEW a fucking pass that they would not give other promotions a pass. So, you know, I had to mention it because it's fucking dumb. So, this six-man tag, Damnation won this match, as I just mentioned, in 15:50. Soma, like, really goes hard after Ueno. ahead of their upcoming Universal title match, unsurprisingly. He just beats him up on the floor, chokes him in the corner, etc. Hino keeps repeatedly killing Shuma with chops while Shuma's on the apron. That was pretty funny. He would just keep going over there and just chopping him off the apron again. They had some more fun interactions, especially Shuma trying to win a test of strength against him from on top of his own shoulders, which, you know, it's kind of funny. But he still can't even get him to budge at all. And then Soma and Ueno have another big exchange. They throw some hard elbows. That ends with Soma putting him down with a roaring elbow right to the gut, which you don't really see every day. That gets a near fall. Soma finally hits the vertebraker. They call it the reverse Gory special, but vertebraker sounds cooler. Just after the 15-minute call. But then he pulls Ueno up. He, just when he has the champ beat, he throws the referee into the damnation corner and then hits a low blow just for the hell of it. I love that. It's like, he did not need this low blow to beat this man. He had this man beat already. He just hit a low blow because he's a fucking asshole. And then he gives him the gin and tonic. He pins him with one knee for the very dominant win heading into the title match. Just a great ending here. I mean, look, Soma Takao, he's not like an all-time great or anything, but he's clearly like a guy who, you know, has been around DDT for a while and is positioned at a certain level. So it should, you know, Yuki Ueno should kind of have to look at this as like a really big hill to climb. So it makes sense that Soma just got to beat the shit out of him here heading up the title match. I wouldn't really mind them Soma winning either. And then maybe Ueno has to come back and beat him for the title. But yeah, I mean, I just, you know, this is a great start to this feud. You know, the match itself, a little long, but featured a lot of comedy, and the comedy was pretty fun. And the match was enjoyable for the most part. I would go like 3.25.
Yeah, no, I like the match as well. And to me, Ueno has clearly been the MVP of DDT so far.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, I love this match with Okada, and that was tremendous. And I think he can probably like have a really good match with Takao as well. Like, Takao, he's not like, as you mentioned, like, he's not like the top, like, at one put him amongst like the top level workers in DDT. But I think if you put him in there with the right guy that is hot, like, he can have a really great match. And obviously, Ueno is like piping hot right now. So, like, if you put him in there with him, like, I think they can have like a tremendous match.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to it. Between matches 3 and 4, Naomi Yoshimura came out and confirmed he's returning after about 6 months off. He last appeared at Ultimate Party last year due to complications of his neck injury. So he's returning May 9th at Korakuen, the opening night of the Ultimate Tag League. He requested Yuki Ueno, speaking of him, his longtime partner, as his opponent, but that was not yet confirmed. But, you know, I assume it'll happen once he asked for it. But yeah, I mean, great to see him back. I mean, you never fucking know with neck injuries, you know? You never know how long someone's going to be out. I mean, you know, look at what's his name in All Japan?
Nomura.
Yeah, I mean, you know, no word on him, really. So, I mean, you just never know what, like, anything neck or spine, how long someone's going to be out for. So it's definitely was really good to see him here. I just can't wait to see him back in the ring. Match number 3, the gorgeous Matsuno pre-60th birthday commemorative match. So the first one, so Tetsuya Endo, Mad Polly, and Nobuhiro Shibatani defeated gorgeous Matsuno, Torawashi, and Tonio Honda, when Endo pinned Matsuno with a head scissors in 24 seconds. This was fucking hilarious. Matsuno comes out. He asks to start with Endo. Endo declines for first for some reason. He rolls out the wing. But then he finally does oblige. And this goes even worse for Matsuno than you probably expect. Endo basically traps him in a headlock, gets the big leg scissors, and immediately pins him. Like, I've never seen someone pin with a fucking head scissors before. It was amazing. And just, everybody starts to leave. I'm fucking dying. And, you know, the GM, Imabayashi, gets up and says, you know, God damn it, all of you, what the fuck? Get back in the ring right now. He's like, do you get it? This is the pre-birthday of Gorgeous Machino. It's his last match of his 50s. Use your head, read the room. He's like, going off. And then he's like, Endo, look, this is the hero of the Tohoku region. He's your father's friend, goddammit. And referee Matsuri, he's like, you know, two referee Matsuri, he's like, even if the shoulders are down, don't just count the pen. Think. And then we restart the match. So the second match, this was just so fucking funny. The second match, Masuno, Iwashi, and Honda actually managed to win. They beat Endo, Paulie, and Shimatani. Honda pinned Shimatani with the diving fist drop in 6:59. You know, we start, they do more mat wrestling. Endo has Masuno pinned again in the exact same way, but this time he kicks out. I guess it's up to the viewer's interpretation whether Endo let him kick out or not. Masuno tries to powerbomb Mad Polly after that with a big praying setup, i.e. like Jinsei Shinzaki. Of course cannot do that. His back gives out immediately. Endo is like corpsing on the apron watching this. He is just fucking dying. I mean, Endo is like the number one corpse for DDT. Just cannot stop laughing sometimes, but like he was going crazy here. Masuno finally gets a wrestler he can handle. He reverses a suplex attempt from Shimatani with a suplex of his own. He's able to make a big tag to Iwashi. A blinded Endo and a blinded Polly from the Gongitsu, the Gon the Fox, accidentally gives poor Shimatani a torture rack bomb and a big splash, respectively. And that leaves him open for Gorgeous to hit the superstar elbow, followed by a fist drop from Honda for the pin. So they finish 1-1, I guess. And then post-match, you know, Masuno gets the microphone again. Referee Matsui is like, no, we don't need you to speak anymore. And he's like, let me speak. I'm turning 60. I debuted at 40. So I'm only 20 years into my career. I plan to. And the music hits. He's forced to leave. It's just like this entire package. I don't really star rate DDT comedy, like pure comedy, but this is really fucking funny.
Yeah, no, I thought this was pretty funny as well. Like, I think it was definitely helped by, like, the first match or the first fall, I guess. I don't know what the best way to call it. Like, I think that really just, like, immediately puts you in a good mood. Like, I think even if generally you don't like comedy matches, just, like, what... Like, I don't think there's anyone that wouldn't just, like, love the start of the match. Because that's really, like, wrestling comedy done perfectly right. And then I think the antics afterwards were, like, pretty funny as well.
Match number two was a... 8-man tag here. Chris Brooks, Saki Akai, Yuki Ino, and Yuki Onaya defeat Makoto Oishi, Akito, Kazuki Hirata, and Keigo Nakamura. Saki pins Nakamura at the, oh god, the Quetzalcoatl. I can never pronounce that. It's something from the what's it, what was that stage play she was in? It was like Fate Grand Order, right, I think?
Oh, so is it from that? It's because I always, it's like a Mayan god, isn't it?
Yeah, so I think she played that in a fake Grand Order stage play. I am not a Fate person. That's like an anime / smartphone game, you know, series for people don't know.
Yes, certainly Fate is a smartphone game and nothing else. Definitely nothing else. Don't dig into Fate. It's only a smartphone game, nothing else.
Oh yeah, and it's also like a hentai series, right? But I just know it from the smartphone game because my friends play Fake Grand Order a lot, so they sure love that series. It's never been a thing I play, but I know a lot of people who play it. Anyway, so Saki Kai gets the pin here in 10:08. A screaming Keigo Nakamura running at Yuki Onaya as like fast and hard as he can, only to bounce off him instantly as soon as they're both tagged in. That was the highlight for me. It was very funny. Just fucking screaming as he like bounces off this man. We get the big sequence with Hirata placing his sunglasses on Ino and then like moves him around the ring with an evil grin, like some kind of deranged puppet master. That was really funny. Ino picks him up on his shoulders for a dance, but he's actually free of his power. The sunglasses came off. So he drops him with a Death Valley driver. That was really funny. And then Hirata ends up rolling him up anyway, though. So just a really fun little sequence. And then Saki Akai ends up pinning Nakamura to finish off a fun little match. I would go like 3 stars or so.
Yeah, no, this was fun, definitely. What I am curious about is, though, is the Saki Akai versus Chris Brooks extreme title match.
Yeah.
Like, I'm very curious what type of match that is actually going to be. If Saki Akai actually does a death match, that's
something.
That's
right?
Going to be something, yeah.
So the post-match promo, she basically says she wants to challenge Chris Brooks because she says, I got the 6-man belt to form an eruption, but I lost it for the team. Ever since, I've been watching Sakaguchi and Higuchi in title matches from the corner. I was just like, everybody's busting their asses in DET right now, and I want to carry some of the weight too. I want to challenge you for the for your extreme title. And then she says in English, I want your belto. And there you go. And you know, Chris Brooks says, you know, wakarimashita in Japanese. Like, I understand. But yeah, GM Imabayashi, I don't think he announced a place for it. I think he just said, well, it'll be a double title match as of now, since Saki is the current Iron Man heavy metalweight champion. But, you know, she has to hold it till then, of course. So we'll see.
Yeah, no, that's going to be really interesting. Like, imagine if it actually ends up being, like, if they do, like, a proper death match, and then she ends up liking it, and so gives up her acting career, and 20 years she looks like Jun Kasai.
Yeah. What a headcanon you came up with there. But there you go. So the opener was the Yuya Koroku debut match. Yusuke Okada beat him with a crab hold in 7:28. I thought this was, you know, a good little debut for Yuya. Pretty standard opening young boy stuff, but with some time for him to show off his, you know, his amateur wrestling background, his legit amateur wrestling background. Which, imagine being like a legit amateur wrestler and being like, I'm going to DET. It's just kind of interesting. But yeah, he did lose this, of course, but, you know, I thought he looked pretty good as far as the first match goes. I went like 2 3/4.
Yeah, no. Also interesting. Look, it's Okada, and he's winning an undercard match. It's like, it's been a while since I've seen that. Definitely wouldn't have been winning the match. Here's the thing, like, his run towards the end got so bad. Like, if this exact match had happened, like, at the end of last year in All Japan, would he have won the match? Because I think he wouldn't.
Yeah, it was something with him. I mean, they knew he was leaving, I guess, but yeah, I mean, it was really something to watch in real time.
But again, still, like, even if you know the guy is leaving, like, I don't know, like, at least, like, don't drop him out for a year. Like, maybe build him up. Maybe try and convince him to not, like, have this, like, tremendous young talent. Maybe try and give him a push, at least at first, and then let's see maybe if you can, like, change his mind. And then, I don't know, like, if he then doesn't leave, then you can, like, drop him out on the way out. Like, you can have him lose, like, a big match and then lose, like, a couple of tag matches at the end. But at least you, like, try to keep this talent and don't just, like, start burying him right away. So he's definitely leaving. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I mean, it was really, really bizarre. You know, but a lot of All Japan booking has been bizarre in the last, like, year and a half.
So. I'm sure we've actually probably talked about that a lot more in the first half of the show.
That's true. The first half that we haven't... Don't spoil anything for me, by the way. I haven't watched it. I haven't looked at the spoilers because I want to be, you know, I don't like...
Yeah, I haven't seen any spoilers either, but...
Okay.
Yeah.
The under match, which I did not watch, so did you watch this?
I actually did watch the under match, but it was, okay, like, more with, like, a half eye. I don't really remember all that much about it.
Okay. It was two more young boys, Deki Okatani beating Tori Kojima with the Northern Lights suplex in 5:06. There's really no good reason why I didn't watch this. It's mostly because if the show airs on Samurai, my option is Samurai or Universe. I always go with Samurai because it's just a... it looks better on my TV because I have that, like, Japanese streaming service loaded onto my Fire Stick, and just, it's like, you know, very smooth streaming. Whereas, like, just loading up the Universe on the browser, it's just like, you know, the frames per second is a little low.
Yeah.
So yeah, but yeah, Samurai does not air the undermatch. So, and it's pretty much why I didn't watch it.
Yeah. No, I mean, I love, like, the, like, Wrestle Universe. Like, it's obviously, like, a tremendous value service and everything. And this was actually, like, I got myself a Xbox Series S recently. So it was, like, the first time I actually, like, watched it on the browser on the Xbox Series S. And, like, this is something that I've, like, encountered, like, a couple times on, like, other devices as well, not just this one. Because, like, my biggest criticism about, like, Wrestle Universe is that it has the most finicky login screen I've ever encountered with any service ever. Like, it took me such a long time to actually, like, be able to log in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember. Yeah, it is pretty finicky. I see. PS5 does not have a internet browser. Very weird. Like, and they should really add one because it's, like, really. Because I used to watch Universe on my PS4, but can't do that anymore. So there you go. That's DDT. Paul, let's wrap up the show that we've only recorded half of. Where can people find you on Voices of Wrestling? Well, I guess I can find your Voice of Wrestling.
Spoiler.
Yeah. What are you doing?
Yeah, no, yes, Voice of Wrestling. I assume by the time you hear this, since we're going to record the rest tomorrow, my review of the night two of the Champion Carnival should be up. So you can read
what
that.
Did you think of it, by the way? Did you? I seem to be way lower than like Grapple.
I liked it. It definitely wasn't nearly as good as night one, obviously. I think it was still relatively solid, and there's something I want to say, but maybe I want to talk about this tomorrow / in the first half of the show. So I'm not going to say it right now. But like, I think overall it was pretty solid. I did like Otani versus Kento. Like,
yeah, Otani versus Kento was awesome.
Yeah, that was pretty
good.
Star,
I went 4 stars on that, but I thought the rest of the show was like kind of bad. I don't know the rest of the other four.
Here's the thing. I think the weirdest match, and you can read that in the review, to me was Doi versus why am I blanking on his name right now? Doi versus.
Yeah, I can help you. Let me see. I don't remember who the fuck Doi faced, but let's say Doi versus Koi Sato.
Yeah, versus Koi Sato. That was the weirdest match, like, because I actually like the first couple of minutes of that, because they just like did like this really nice stiff like sprint type of match, and then they just for the second half of the match just did like the tease where Doi got knocked out, and then that was the
really
entire match. And I was like, I don't know, you could have just done a sprint where they just beat the shit out of each other, and I probably would have liked that a lot more than doing this weird like knockout tease. Overall, I think it was still solid. Like, I think it's definitely a lot, like, I think that show, if you put that show on last year's Carnival, it's like the best or second best show of the entire tournament.
Yeah, I was lower than you then, because I don't know. I thought it was much more like the 2020 tournament than night one was, which night one was great. Mm-hmm. But hey, you'll hear us talk. You've already heard us talk about night three. So we haven't even watched it yet as we're recording this, but wacky. Okay, so Paul, you got that. Anything else? Twitter?
I mean, this, you're going to put it in the post, so it's going to be there. So follow me if you want to. But as I said on the Mania preview, I don't ever actually tweet. So it's my one number one rule of Twitter is never tweet. And the only thing I do is like retweet and like the things that I'm on. So, yeah.
There you go. All right, folks. So that will wrap us up here. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter at WrestleOmakase, Wrestling Wouldn't Fit. Patreon.com/WrestlingOmakase. We'll have another new one match episode later this week. Assuming it's going up on Monday, I think it'll be like 2 days later. And then we'll have a more Champion Carnival coverage. Because again, as I'm sure I went over already in the night three coverage, night three is the only night of the Champion Carnival we are covering on the free feed. Every other show right up to the final will be only on the Patreon. So if you want to hear my thoughts on the entire rest of this tournament, starting next weekend with the Saturday and Sunday shows, nights 4 and 5, patreon.com/WrestlingOmakase. Only $5, you get everything we've ever done. It's almost approaching a year now of content. Just a ton of stuff on there. Plus the Champion Carnival stuff for this month. Plus everything else we're going to do. The Wrestling Dontaku shows will be covered exclusively on the Patreon next month. So just tons of stuff. You know, every big tournament you can think of. I mean, you know, like I mentioned, King of DDT. You know. So just tons of stuff on there. Patreon.com/WrestlingOmakase. And thank you, as always, for listening, folks. And we will see you. Oh, I need to plug next week's episode. Next week, I'll be joined by Kevin Brown. That'll probably be on Monday, April 19th. And Kevin, of course, from the Bad Wrestling Podcast, will be with me to discuss the 2 Corican Hall shows from Pro Wrestling NOAH, the Sunday, April 18th Corican, and Tokyo Joshi, we haven't talked about in a while, the Saturday, April 17th Corican. So that'll be next week's free episode here. In the meantime, thank you for listening, and we will see you next time.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.